remarkably muscular and wiry, tapering to narrow waists and spindly legs. Stickies weren't good walkers and were hopeless runners. Their eyes had a feline split pupil, often bloodshot and encrusted with a yellow slime. Their noses were non-existent, only raw holes between eyes and mouth that ceaselessly dripped gobbets of mucus. There was a common strain of sticky genetics that produced creatures without mouths, but these had mouths that were almost lipless, peeling back to reveal the teeth, most of which were needle-pointed, the remainder broken or missing, and giving the appearance of a neglected arsenal. The fingers were exceedingly long and tapered, with small suckers across them, suckers that also covered the palms of the hands, and often extended to the feet as well. Stickies only really relished three things. They loved killing any weaker creature, using their muddy hands to tear flesh off the living bones. They were also mysteriously attracted to loud explosions and to large fires. The female Sticky was nearest, shuffling toward Mildred, eyes lighting with a voracious fire of hatred. Mildred didn't hesitate. To fumble with her pistol would have meant death. She simply swung the half-dozen water bottles that she'd taken off her saddle, hanging on the leather straps, using them like a flail. They hit the Sticky across the shoulder and the side of the head, sending her staggering sideways, dropping her blaster. Doc had a couple of moments longer, and he used them well, dropping his water bottles and reaching for the Lama on his right hip, hefting the heavy pistol and thumbing back on the hammer. Seeing the blaster, the Stickies hesitated a moment, drawing closer together, around 12 feet away from the old man in the faded frock coat. They made a perfect target for the scattergun barrel of the unique pistol. Because of the short barrel, the 63 caliber round was useless at anything over 20 feet or so. At close range, the effect was utterly devastating. The gun kicked so hard in Doc's hand that the barrel ended up pointing directly toward the flock of buzzards. Mildred, already reaching for her own ZKR-551, was astounded by the explosion of the Lama. To her astonished eyes, Doc and the four male Stickies that were threatening him had vanished behind a billowing cloud of powder smoke.
Damn!
As it cleared away, Doc was stooped over his gun, his fingers nimbly changing the position of the firing hammer. There didn't seem to be too much pressure to hurry, as all four of the Stickies were down in a tangle of arms and legs and smeared blood. The one with the sword was dying, his throat and most of his face ripped away by the starring cascade of lead. One of the others had almost lost its left arm, only a few strings of sinew keeping the limb attached to the shoulder. The third man had taken a scattering of pellets in the chest, a few of them dotting his jaw and cheeks. He was trying to get up, spitting blood and broken splinters of teeth into the earth. The fourth one looked like he'd hardly been hurt at all, and was groping for his fallen knife. Out of the corner of her eye, Mildred saw that the female Sticky was coming at her again, barehanded.
Like hell you will.
Mildred hadn't the lifetime of experience in Deathlands that Ryan and the others shared. All she knew was that a 38 caliber round from her pistol would be enough to put down any normal person. The impact of the bullet left a neat dark hole drilled between the mutie's residual breasts. The creature staggered back several paces under the impact of the shot. But then kept on coming.
Shit! What is this? Night of the Living Dead?
Oh, confound it!
Meanwhile, Doc had his own trouble. His Lama was proving stubborn. Despite all of the exhortations from JB, Doc hadn't always been as scrupulous as he should about field stripping and cleaning his antique blaster. Now he was paying the price. To adjust the gun from the sawed-off barrel to the revolver should only have been the work of a few seconds. It was nearly done. Nearly. Stickies weren't indestructible, but it took a lot to kill them. Just losing an arm might slow one down, but it would keep on at you. And a few scattergun pellets in the mouth would hardly hinder a murderous Sticky at all. So Doc had three of them in varying states of health, closing in on him again.
Blast him, Doc!
Mildred was unable to see what his problem was, aware only that the female Sticky was moving toward her, fingers flexing.
I'm trying, you luck brain pavement pounder!
Doc backed away, and still desperately struggled with the recalcitrant weapon. His feet were on the brink of the pool. Mildred squeezed the trigger of her customized target pistol twice more, taking careful aim for the Sticky's head. Both bullets hit precisely the same spot, leaving a single entry wound. But they hit differing degrees of bone on the way through and started tumbling and distorting in different ways, exiting at the same microsecond 4 inches apart.
Hell yeah!
It was about the most amazing thing that Mildred had ever seen. The simultaneous exit of the two rounds caused the Sticky's head to explode. For a moment, the mutie's face remained in place, like a two-dimensional mask, but with nothing behind it. The whole rear part of the skull from the ears back had vanished in a mist of blood, brains, and flying splinters of bone. A large watermelon hit simultaneously by both barrels of a 10-gauge might give some idea of what it looked like. The female took two horrific, tottering steps toward Mildred. Then the strings finally cut, and the corpse dropped to the dirt.
Mm-hmm. How do you like that?
The crack of the blaster and the extraordinary passing of their companion stopped the other three survivors dead in their tracks, goggling eyes turning toward Mildred. Doc saw his chance and took it, backing away a few paces into the scummy pool until he was knee-deep, all the while working on the Lamont. He finally succeeded in shifting the stubborn hammer.
Now, you demons from the deepest circle of purgatory!
Each of the Stickies collected three of the 36 caliber bullets. Doc wasn't the greatest marksman in the world, but at 15 feet, even he was capable of reasonable accuracy. He had also learned enough not to waste lead on the bodies of the Stickies.
Good shot, Doc. Win's you a prize.
Life is prize enough, dear Mildred.
Ain't that the truth?
They were back at the wag train with the containers of water before the sun had completely set. Ryan jerked awake, his hand automatically closing on the butt of his blaster. Only when he had the gun firmly in his fingers did he start to think about what had awakened him. He lay under a couple of blankets, head resting on his folded coat. The bed of one of the wags was over his head, his feet touching one of the large wooden wheels. Christy was at his side, and Ryan sensed that she too was awake.
You heard it?
Christy reached across the small space between them and squeezed his hand.
Yeah, woke me. Think anyone else heard it?
Don't know. Probably it touches them when they come close to the surface, then sleep pulls them down again. Like a tiny muffled bell heard in a dusty back room of a huge house.
Hey, that's real poetic, lover. Like some of those old books. I know what you mean. Think there still could really be a train running someplace?
Why not? Barons out east are supposed to have whirlywags. We saw that flying wag a few months back. Why not a train?
Didn't they run electric? Can't be that sort of power left in the Deathlands.
Ryan finally let go of the Sig Sauer.
Some did. But some of the old ones ran on coal and wood. If there really is one still going, we might see smoke as well as hearing the whistle in the middle of the night.
Before leaving the Valley of Death, where the carcasses of the muties were now stripped of all edible flesh, the wag train filled up their barrels, buckets, and bottles with water, preparing for the trip farther west. Major Ward's map was a little vague on where the next waterhole might be located, though it did show an old township around 2 days' travel ahead of them.
It's called Salvation.
The wagmaster showed Ryan the inked name on the piece of paper.
Be there around evening tomorrow.
You sure, JB?
As usual, the armorer was right. The next couple of days drifted by in a haze of dust and heat. For Ryan and his group, there was only one noteworthy incident. During the evening of the first day, Jack had gone outside the circle of wags to relieve himself. He was gone for nearly a quarter of an hour, and when he came back, it was obvious that something had happened. He ignored his five friends and went straight to his own blanket, lying down with his back to the others. Ryan exchanged glances with the other companions, raising a questioning eyebrow. But all of them shrugged their own bewilderment. Since they'd left the Ballinger spread, the teenager had been slightly more reticent than usual. But Jack was never a great one for idle chatter. Since they joined the wags, his only worry seemed to have been caused by the attention of Sharon Vare.
Go ask him.
Okay.
Ryan stood and stretched, looking around as the train readied itself for the night. Guards were being set, and the last residue from supper was being tidied away. The young children were in their sleeping clothes, scampering around and trying to avert the evil hour when they'd be sent to their beds. Ryan stood looking down at Jack for a moment, knowing the boy was aware of his presence. From behind, Jack looked even younger than his 15 years, his slight frame and the cascade of pure white hair making him seem more like a little girl. Ryan hunkered down to lean against the metal-rimmed wheel of the rig.
Something wrong, Jack?
No.
No?
Yeah.
That mean, yeah, there's something wrong, or yeah, there's nothing wrong?
Yeah.
I'm still no wiser.
The boy half turned, squinting up at the man.
Means something's fucking wrong. You know that, Ryan.
Thought so. What is it?
My business.
You said that about Christina Ballinger. Is this about her?
No.
Sharon Vare?
Who told?
It was a fairly obvious guess, but Jack reacted as though someone had just pushed a branding iron halfway up his ass. He threw the blanket to one side, jumping to his feet, his hand dropping to the massive blaster on his hip.
Cool down. Don't you ever move to draw on me, Jack.